the National Broadcasting Company's facilities and its associated stations in many areas have remained on the air beyond their regular period in order to keep their listeners advised of the latest news from Europe. We hope at this time to bring you a news summary direct from London. Please stand by with us as we take you now to London, England.
Hello, America.
This is London.
The city awoke this morning to read news which you throughout the United States heard last night. You heard it as it was given out from the sources,
from mainland source.
The principal hope is everyone here people who were up at the time and heard the news, the last minute news, the hope that there was a delay, that war, which throughout yesterday, the whole city, the whole country felt to be very close, the hope that it was put off for some indefinite period remains this morning, but there is not too optimistic a tone anywhere in the press. The release that there has been any delay is apparent and is stated. But it would be exaggerating to say that there was any expression of opinion, an average expression of opinion here, leading people to believe that we are anywhere near out of a very critical and a very touchy position. The Times this morning concludes their editorial by a reference to the articles which have been reported from the German press. Articles of an inflammatory character, of a challenging character, which have been quoted currently over the last few days. The first of those articles, the Times this morning says, if the German press has faithfully stated German policy, then here is an issue on which every British citizen, without exception, knows where he stands. The Telegraph, the Independent Telegraph, says, on the most favorable interpretation of German military activities in the neighborhood of the frontier, they are undoubtedly of a character to cause embarrassment to the conduct of any negotiation and to create the danger of a spontaneous outbreak of the very conflict which it is the whole aim and object of the Gettysburg meeting to avert. The Daily Telegraph is an independent paper, and I read an excerpt from their editorial this morning. The editorial concludes, it is a matter of congratulation and source of confidence that the public here has maintained an imperturbable calm during a week of the most anxious suspense, while the great issues for the country, and indeed for civilization itself, have been debated behind closed doors. When the Prime Minister returns today, the moment will undoubtedly be ripe for taking Parliament and the public into his confidence. The Daily Mail begins its editorial this morning by quoting the words which Mr. Chamberlain spoke last night when leaving the hotel at Gettysburg. The words are, you cannot call this a complete breakdown. And their editorial starts with those words, continuing, says Mr. Chamberlain, when after 3 hours continues from our consultation with Herr Hitler, he reached his hotel at Gettysburg in the early hours of this morning. They conclude their editorial by saying it is earnestly hoped that Mr. Chamberlain's determined efforts to preserve peace will finally prevail. He has gone to the utmost limit of concession on a democratic issue of self-determination. And if in spite of all he should fail, history will know where to lay the blame. It will not be upon Mr. Chamberlain. The Daily Express begins its editorial as follows. We have a respite.
That is the meaning of the 2 a.m. message which an Axis world received at the conclusion of Mr. Chamberlain's talk with Hitler. A respite in which the forces of conciliation can continue their beneficent work. Referring to the possibility of this country finding itself at war or obliged to take a decision on that point, the editorial says, and we know where the issue would be determined on our account. The House of Commons is the proper place for grave decisions on national policy. In the House of Commons 24 years ago, a similar issue was put to the elected representatives of this people. If we should be put to the same test right now, we shall see a strange reversal of judgment. For among those who would speak for war, we should find the liberals and the socialists. And the speeches made against that force would come from the right wing of British policies. For the present, let there be calm in our hearts and coolness in our minds. Refuse to be swayed by passions. Let no hasty judgments disturb the resolve to choose one path wisely and with a full consideration of every factor in this grave situation. The liberal paper, the News Chronicle, in its editorial says, when Prague accepted the Franco-British plan, it was grotesque to hear Hitler to pretend that the Sudetans had any grievances left for him to remedy. The British and French governments have gone to the utmost limit of concessions in the hope of avoiding war. If Mr. Hitler is still dissatisfied and asks for more, it is proof positive that the welfare of the Sudetans is only a secondary consideration. In fact, a decorum. And that his real aim is European domination. Against this aim, Mr. Chamberlain and the British and French governments must stand adamant. Then, in the Daily Herald, the Labour paper, we find an editorial which begins, great issues are being settled at Gettysburg. In the conversations which went on between Mr. Chamberlain and Herr Hitler until after midnight, something much more than the issue of Czechoslovakia, though that is big enough and tragic enough, heaven knows, was at stake. Lower down, they refer to the issue. The issue which is being settled at Gettysburg is not only the future of the Sudeten Germans, not only what is even more vital, the future of Czechoslovakia as an independent state, but the issue of whether the problems of Europe are to be settled by negotiation or by force. Those are the editorial comments, briefly, put to you, which we find in this morning's press in London. At the moment, although I have not heard whether his plane has actually started, at the moment, then, I would say that Mr. Chamberlain's arrival is awaited here. It was expected a few minutes ago that he would arrive at Heston Airport probably about 11:15 a.m. London time or 6:15 a.m. New York time. What remains to be said must obviously be said in the light of what Mr. Chamberlain tells the public, tells his cabinet, and tells Parliament at the time present. Until then, until the exact terms of whatever Mr. Chamberlain is bringing back are clearly known, nothing can be said that falls entirely outside the realm of speculation. You will hear from London later in the day, and whenever there is something real to report. And now, we return you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Via radio, the National Broadcasting Company has brought you a summary of the situation as pieced together by Fred Bade, NBC's London representative. Later in the morning, we hope to bring you other commentaries from the various European capitals. And also, as Mr. Bade has just told you, we hope to bring you a description of Prime Minister Chamberlain's arrival in London. Until such time, we return you now to our normal schedule. The music of Springtime originating in San Francisco.